Pirkei Eliezer, Perek Lamed Gimel. We're holding in the middle of the Perek, towards the end already. This Perek we've been discussing the idea of it's a tangent that we've been off on the whole Perek already about Tchias Meisim, different stories about Tchias Meisim. So we started off the Perek with Eliyahu and Navi and talking about how Tztaka is something that Bezchus Tztaka, it brings about Tchias Meisim, that a person is Zeichet to Tchias Meisim. We saw that by the person who helped out Eliyahu and Navi. And then we had two more stories about Elisha and Navi, that the lady who helped Elisha was Zeichet to Tchias Meisim. And then we said the story of Shalom ben Tikva, whose corpse was thrown into the caver of Elisha Hanavi, and he was Zechet at Chias Vesim, and the Medrash explained because he used to give out water to people that were coming into the city. Well, there's different stories about that doing tztaka brings it to Chias Vesim. So now the Medrash is going to talk about another story of Chias Vesim that sort of has to do with Chias Vesim. The connection over here is not so apparent, but we'll see what the Medrash is trying to say. We're up to the words of Chanina ben Tradyan Aymer. Chanina ben Tradyan says, Teida lecha koyach tzedaka. You should know for yourself the power of tzedaka. Over here, the story that we're gonna bring down is actually has nothing to do with tzedaka. It has nothing to do with doing good things or money or giving money or charity or whatever, helping out other people. It has nothing to do with that. The story that we're gonna bring down. So the Bayis HaGadol has a different girsa. The Bayis HaGadol's girsa is Tedelacha Koyach HaTzadikim. You should know the power of the tzadikim. And we're going to say that the power of the tzaddikim is that they can bring about Tchias Meisim or Pashas. Maybe it's going to be a different Chiddush in the end, but that's the Pashas of the way that Bayis HaGadol explains what's happening over here. The Marzu takes a different approach. It says like this. We're going to be talking about today the story of Shaul ben Kish, the first king of Bnei Yisrael, Shaul ben Kish, when he went to go conjure the spirit of Shmuel HaNavi, after Shmuel HaNavi had already passed away. So you could ask it like, so why was Shaul ben Kish Zeicha that he would be able to conjure up the deceased spirit of Shmuel HaNavi? So the Marzu says, because there's a Medrash that says that Shaul was such a tzaddik, he did stuck with all these women that when their husbands went out to go fight in the wars, so he would give them money and food and everything and take care of their needs. That's what Shaul used to do. So the Marzu understands that because in the zchus of the tztaka that Shaul used to do for these women, that's why he was zechut to what's going to happen in this story. Says the Medrash, Boy orei Mishaul ben Kish. Come and see from the story of Shaul ben Kish. Sheheisir es ha'ovais ve'es ha'yedoinim. That he had removed the ovais and yedoinim. Ovais and yedoinim are different types of necromancy mentioned in the Torah, that it says that you're not allowed to do oiv and yedoini, or it's called a bal oiv and yedoini. It's different types of trying to communicate with people who are dead. It's like a whole, I forget exactly how it goes, I think the Gemara speaks about it, that like you take a bone of a dog and you put it under your armpit and then like it talks, something like that. I don't remember, I didn't get into it exactly, but something more or less something like that. Some sort of witchcraft type of thing that brings it that you can speak to people who are dead. So Shaul HaMelech went on a campaign. When he became king, he got rid of the Ovis and Yedeinim. But we saw earlier actually in Perek Yud Zayin, we spoke about that Shaul HaMelech got rid of all of Avodah Zarah in Klal Yisrael. It's an interesting thing that in the time of the Sefer Shoftim, which is like the period before Shaul HaMelech, and Shmuel Navi, as they say, like the last of the Shoftim, whether he's a Shofet or not, no, that's a Shaila in the Mefarshim. But in the time of the Shoftim, Klal Yisrael was on and off committing idolatry. They were doing Avodah Zarah on and off throughout the time of the Sefer Shoftim, and different tkufas, sometimes more, sometimes less, etc. But when Shaul HaMelech came and he became king, so he got rid of all the Avodah Zarah, and he made sure that no one was doing any Avodah Zarah anymore, and we don't find any Avodah Zarah in Klal Yisrael, you know, the whole period of Shaul, all the way down, and then through David, and then Shlomo HaMelech, it seems like he was the one who sort of reintroduced certain elements of idolatry into Klal Yisrael. But Shaul HaMelech did got rid of the Ovis and the Yedoinim, he got rid of the Avodah Zorah in general. So the Medrash says, V'chazer v'ohav es asher soneh. And then he sort of rescinded and he loved that which he had originally hated. Meaning he originally hated Avodah Zorah and these types of necromancies, and then afterwards he changed his mind, so to speak, and then he started to love them. He went after them himself. The Radal points out that's like it's sort of I don't know if he's saying that it's an oinish or it's like an irony or it's like a parallelism that you find that originally it says in the pasuk. In Shmuel Aleph, in Perek Tazayin, it says that Shaul HaMelech loved David HaMelech a lot. Vayaveihu ma'id. He loved him a lot. And then afterwards, you know, Shaul tried to kill him and make sure that David gets killed or whatever. He hated him. So he started off loving David and then he hated him. So the Radal says, just like he started loving David and ended up hating him, so the opposite we find by Shaul HaMelech's relationship with the Avodah Zorah. He started off hating the Avodah Zorah and then he ended up loving it. Well, not necessarily what it is, but this element of Ivy Yedoinim. The story goes basically it was that the Jewish army was fighting the Plishtim and they were caught up in like a really bad situation and it looked like the Plishtim were like, Mamish gonna defeat him. We're Mamish gonna defeat the Jews. And Shaul went to the Nevi'im and the Nevi'im didn't answer him and he went to the Kohen Gadol to ask him the Urim and Tumim, I think it says in the Pasuk, and they didn't answer him and he asked different people who see things in dreams and they didn't answer him and he didn't know what to do. And the big Navi, his Rebbe, Shmuel HaNavi, was already dead. So like Shaul HaMelech didn't know what to do, what direction should he take? Should he surrender? Should he fight to the death? Etc. He didn't know what to do. So he really wanted to go ask his Rebbe, but his Rebbe is already dead. So what did he do? V'holach el Ein Dor, he went to a place called Ein Dor, el Isha Tzfanya, Ima Isha Avner. He went, or the Girsa of the Radal is, el Isha Balas Oiv, to a woman who was a Balas Oiv. She was this female necromancer. Her name was Tzfanya, that's why I understand that, how it reads. Her name was Tzfanya, Ima Isha Avner, and she was the mother of Avner. Avner ben Ner, he was the general of Shaul HaMelech's army. And it happens to be that Avner ben Ner was also Shaul HaMelech's first cousin. Meaning, Shaul ben Kish was Shaul's father, and Avner ben Ner, right, Ner is Avner's father, so Kish and Ner were brothers. And this woman, Tzfanya, it seems her name was, she was the wife of this guy Ner, so she was basically she was Shaul HaMelech's aunt or aunt if you're English. So he went to this lady who was a Balas Oiv, Ushala Ba'iv, and he asked her through necromancy, you know, what am I supposed to do, and can you help me out? Now there's a few questions to discuss over here. First of all, the question is like this. Her name is, the way I understood it, her name is Tzfanya. Yeah, that's what the Medrash is saying. Her name is Tzfanya, right? Even though it's like slightly, the wording is a little bit funny. El Isha Tzfanya. Isha Tzfanya. I know what it means, Isha Tzfanya.
I have Tzafnit.
Oh, yeah? I have Tzfanya. I didn't have a chance, I didn't even think to look in the manuscript editions of Pirkei Devot Ezer. It could be there's other guys. You have Tzfanit, which.
Tzafnit.
Tzafnit?
Yeah.
Maybe that means like a seer. Tzafnit, like tzoyfe, to see. I thought it means, Tzfanya means her name, and then I had it a little difficult that, like, we spoke about before in Perek Lamed, we spoke about names that are shared by men and women. Right? So Tzfanya is the name of one of the Nevi'im in Treyasar. Tzfanya ben Kushi, I think his name is. Right? So, and here you have Tzfanya as a woman's name. We spoke about it over there, that could be a problem. There's a few names that are men's names and women's names. I don't know, in English they have like Drew. Drew is a man's name and it's a woman's name also. Or Michael, or different.
That's
what?
Men,
yeah.
Michael. Yeah. exists.
Well, yeah, Michael Jackson, he was a woman.
Oh my goodness, the woman.
I could put it, so we have the name Tzfanya over here, that Ilkhara, it seems like her name is Tzfanya.
I heard a guy named Rachel.
No, a guy named Rachel?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, so Tzfanya, that was her name, okay. Even though it seems like Tzfanya was a man's name, but here it's a woman's name. Or you want to say it's a different guess of Tzfanya, could be, I don't know. I'll go upon him. Fine, that's one issue. The other issue is like this. We just said before that Shaul HaMelech got rid of all the Oivs and Yidonims. He got rid of all these people, these witches that were involved in necromancy and speaking to the dead, crossing over to the dead. Right? So how is it that Shaul was able to find this lady in Ein Dor, this woman who was a Balas Oiv? He got rid of all the Balas Oivs. What's she doing around still?
And it's his aunt.
So you just sort of answered the question. The Radal asks this question. Actually, he doesn't really ask it as a question, but the Radal brings this down, and he says because she was his aunt, that's why he didn't kill her. Because first of all, because she was his aunt. Second of all, because she was the mother of his general. So even though he got rid of all the Balas Ives, but he didn't get rid of her because you know she had connections. She had protection. And then he writes the parentheses, but of course you have to say that her son, or maybe even Shaul, told her, you know, you better stop doing necromancy, you better stop practicing necromancy. And that in this case, she's only going to be doing it because Shaul HaMelech himself asked her to do it. But, you know, otherwise she had already stopped. Otherwise there would be no way of justifying not getting rid of her. That's the Radal's Mahalach. The other Mahalach, Beliomi Izbi over here, in V'loy Oid Ella, so he said he takes a different approach. He looks at her in a much more positive light. He says, there's a halacha in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that you're allowed to learn kishuf, different type. The Gemara actually says it's stronger than that. The Gemara says that a person, in order to become part of the Sanhedrin, you have to know different types of kishuf. Because otherwise, if you don't understand how kishuf works and how to do these different things, so how are you going to be able to try capital cases of somebody who's accused of doing kishuv? You don't even know how to do it. You don't know how it works. So how can you start discussing whether this guy's chayav misar for doing a oiv or yidaini or kishuv or whatever? So you have to learn. So everyone who became part of the Sanhedrin went to kishuv school to go learn how to do it. This is, you know, this is part of the learning of Torah that was required of the people of the Sanhedrin. So he wanted to say that it could be that this lady, she knew it not because she was Be'etzem Abalas Oiv herself, but because she learned it because she wanted to know the halachas or whatever. So she happened to learn that Sugya Bi'iyun, and she knew it because of the Torah Shaboy, not because of she was a witch herself. And she wasn't doing it for the witchcraft. Okay, it's a little bit, he brings out the Kleyakar from Rav Shmuel Laniado, also says this Pshat. It's a little bit Dachuk, I think, because she wasn't on the Sanhedrin, right? It's like, why was she learning it? Not sure exactly. Okay, point five. So that's why she was still around, even though he got rid of all the Balas Oivs and Yidonims. So what did she do? The house of Shmuel, she brought up Shmuel for him. She conjured the spirit of Shmuel, Hanavi. V'alu imay acherim. And when Shmuel Hanavi's spirit came up, other people came up with him. Well, the Mefarshim bring down in the Yalkut Shemayni, when it says this, when it brings this message, it says that Moshe Rabbeinu came up with Shmuel Hanavi because they thought that Shmuel Hanavi was being, you know, after a person dies, so they go to like a certain place in Gan Eden or whatever, and then you're called back. When are you going to be called back? Pashas, a person is going to be called back by the Yom Adin Gadol, when Hashem is going to, you know, judge every person in a final way. So they assume that when Shmuel Levi, I guess his chevra over there in Gan Eden saw that Shmuel Levi was being called out, so they said, oh, Mistama, he's being called out of Gan Eden for his Yom Din HaGadol. So Moshe Rabbeinu accompanied him and said, no, I'm going to help him out on his Yom Din HaGadol. Right? And then when the other people in Gan Eden saw that Shmuel Levi and Moshe Rabbeinu were like going out of Gan Eden and they were like coming down elsewhere, the chesvur and shegia tchias hamesim. The people thought that the time of Tchias HaMesim had arrived. So all the spirits thought Tchias HaMesim was arriving. So like, then like they all started like packing out of Gan Eden. And the woman, this necromancer woman, she saw this sight and she became very scared. Shinema, as it says in the Pasuk, the king, it says in the Pasuk, the king, Shaul, said to her, don't be scared, what did you see? So it seems for the Pasuk, he's telling her, don't be scared, that she saw something that was making her scared and she didn't know what to do. Yeah, the Ra'al asks why, you know, every time you did a balas oiv or yudaini, whenever you conjured somebody's spirit who already died and tried to speak to them, so then the spirit would like come down to earth or whatever that means. So then how come the people got in and didn't think that it was tchias amesim right away? They didn't think it was tchias amesim then. So he says only over here they thought it was tchias amesim because it was Shmuel and Moshe Rabbeinu coming down. So like they thought like, okay, it was like this is mamish the end. But it wasn't really that. There was really Shmuel Levi was being summoned back down to the earth to in order to converse with this lady, or whatever, for Shaul. Fine. V'yeshayimim says the Medrash. V'yeshayimim. And some people say tzadikim harbe kiyetsu by alu imay ba'isa shah. Some people say that when Shmuel Levi came back down to he could speak to Shaul. So a lot of tzaddikim like him came down to the earth at that time. Yeah, you have any questions about that? Well, we just said before.
What? What does that mean?
I don't know what that means. Right, I don't know what that means either. But we just said in the Midrash that when he came out, so other people also came up with him. And now we're saying v'yeshayimrim that tzaddikim like him came up with him at that time. We would just said other people came with him. Why are you telling me again? That would be Eishai Ibrahim Tzadikim also came with him.
Kiyotzibo.
Yeah.
Don't we say on Shabbos that Shmuel was connected with Aaron and...
Moshe of Aaron, Bechayinov, and Shmuel, Bukhari, Shemoy.
That he's sort of like...
Yeah. Shmuel and Nabi is equal to Moshe of Aaron.
So there's no Kiyotzibo in that.
Yeah, I don't know. We also we spoke about this also in one of our earlier prakim about Shmuel the comparison between Shmuel and Avi.
It's very annoying for me.
I mentioned Aaron.
It bothers me a lot. It's some kind of weird contradiction here. So this way of communicating is a way of
Tumo. Yeah.
There's two general approaches of the Rishayim when it comes to these type of topics. There's the Rambam's approach.
That the Rambam understands that things like Avodah Zorah, the Kishuv, and Oiv, and Yudayin, all these things, it's all Shtusim. Shtusim v'hel, it's mamish nothing, it's just idiocracy, whatever. People made it up and they think it's real, and it has no emes to it, b'chlal, it's not true, and it doesn't do anything, and it's just really some guy who's faking you out. And still the Torah tells you don't do it. Because, okay, that's the Rambam's Malach. Other Rishayim, the Ramban, Rashba, Ran, they understand that no, these things actually do work. Avodah Zarah, to some extent, did work. It did bring the desired results. Kishuv did work. It did bring the desired result. All these different things, they did work, at least to some extent. It brought the desired result, and it could accomplish what you were set out to accomplish. Now, there's different ways to explain it. The Ramchal says that really what you would have gotten anyways, without doing the Avodah Zarah, that's what you're going to get with the Avodah Zarah. And Hashem sort of like makes it look like it's coming through the Avodah Zarah in order to test you or whatever. But really, it's not coming through the Avodah Zarah; it's coming directly from Hashem. But other Mefarshim seem to say that there are ways to manipulate nature in a way that you can get more out of it, and that's what the Torah tells you don't do. So they have a difficulty with the Rambam though. The Rambam is saying that Avodah Zarah is Aser. What is Avodah Zarah? Avodah Zarah is Shtusim, right? So the Torah is talking to an idiot. The Torah is telling, like, it's so ridiculous. Like, if you bow down to this idol, so you're gonna get, you know, good luck this year. It's so ridiculous, according to the Rambam, that like, why would the Torah the Torah is talking to somebody who's that stupid? So according to these Rishonim say that no, the people that did Avodah Zarah, they weren't shaitim, they were evil. They were tapping into powers of evil that Hashem put into this world as like a zel o mazeh. There's kedusha can accomplish different things in the world, following the Torah, and then there's not following the Torah could also accomplish certain things in the world. And then those are the powers of evil. So these people would tap into those powers of evil and manipulate that and use it for what they're trying to do. I heard a marshal I heard this b'shem of Simcha Wasserman. He said, what's the marshal? He said like this. Let's say you have a person, he wants to make money. Yeah? So there's two ways you can make money. You could go out and start a business. And you have a successful business, and you make money, right? And you get a certain amount of money a month or whatever, right? Fine. Then there's another way you can make money. What do? You dress up in black and you wear a mask, and you go to the bank teller, and you stick a gun to her head, and you say, "Give me all the money in the vault," and you run off, and you get the money. And at the end of the day, you still have the same amount of money in your pocket, right? Whether you had a successful business or whether you robbed the bank. You're making the same. You can be making the same money, right? The only difference is, did you do it in the right way or did you do it in the wrong way? That's like the difference between Avodah Zarah and Avodah Hashem. Avodah Zarah is you're getting the same money at the end of the day, but you're doing it in the wrong way. Avodah Hashem, you'll get the money in the right way. Someone else had a different marshal. I heard this from my wife. Told me this. B'shem Ben Tzion Kermeyer. He had a different marshal. So there's two ways to start a car, right? You could take a key, stick it in the ignition, turn the key, and start the car like that, right? There's another way that you could like open it up from the back and then like take different wires and fuse them together and hot wire the car and turn on the ignition like that. There's different ways you could do it. At the end of the day, what did you accomplish? You turned on the car. There's two ways to turn on the car. There's the right way and there's the wrong way. But they both work. That's the basic approach to Avodah Zarah and Kishuf and these type of things.
According to the Rambam, it doesn't go like that.
What?
According to the Rambam.
Yeah.
It fits to what the Rambam said.
Yeah.
It's not like that. It's like that moment that you accomplish a different thing that you are not supposed to.
Right.
And you gotta be punished for attempting and succeeding. You're not supposed to touch that that jar of jam. It's not yours.
But there's a jar of jam there. According to the Rambam, there's not even a jar of jam there.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the
Rambam.
Right,
yeah.
It's getting to my head.
Yeah. It's different. It's a whole sugya. It's like it's something you have to like go through the different sources and put it together. Like we can't relate to these things b'chol nowadays. Like we don't understand how these things work.
Different words, I can't relate to
it. Yeah.
I can relate a little to the Rambam because I know somebody, two educated individuals, very educated individuals.
Yeah.
In their child, they brought up a statue of the
Buddha,
and put him on the table next to them while they were in labor. So this is today.
From people.
They're not from people, but they're educated in science and they believe they're modern individuals, and they thought that they'd bring a wood statue, whatever it was. To be there would be helpful in some way. So and nothing's going to happen. There's nothing is going to. They're not accomplishing anything. But nevertheless, they're impugning it with powers that it doesn't have. They're doing something. So according to the Rambam, they're not doing it. There's nothing going to happen, but they're giving something they think in their mind.
Right.
Something's going to happen and give it power.
Like I said, when they should. Something is supposed to happen, and then you put something like the "please help me." You don't know if this thing is helping you out. It's someone else, like Hashem is helping you. It's like in a labor room or whatever we have. Yeah, mm-hmm.
First of all, it's very interesting that it's not so clear if Buddhism is considered a Avodah Zarah or not. First you have to find me somebody who understands what Buddhism is really about, and then try to discuss whether it's a Avodah Zarah. You don't think so?
I don't think so.
I don't know. I try reading Wikipedia articles about it. Like, it just, the words like don't even make sense put together. Like, I can't figure out what it's saying.
There is a safer letter of cats.
Yeah, letters to a Buddhist Jew.
Just tried to buy it. I know, and they didn't have it where I was.
They have it in Manny's, in the, all the way the back. They didn't have it in Manny's.
Yeah, I was there.
I was there last week, like, 2 weeks ago. They had it in Manny's.
I asked the guy. He said, "We always have this. We'll be here in a few days." But anyways, I read some of it, and that explains that, I think.
I actually spoke to my Tats' son a few last week, 2 weeks ago, because I also wanted to buy it. But whatever, the kids are. We'll have to share it. I'll go put him. I actually heard a marshal from my Tats about it. A different marshal. A similar marshal.
Is that the camera?
What? Yeah. About the camera. And
I heard it
from Simcha Wasserman also.
No, I heard it on the show. Oh, you heard it from Simcha Wasserman then? Yeah, fine.
I think. I remember hearing that he said it was Shimon Simcha Wasserman. You heard this marshal before?
No.
You want to say it?
No.
There's a guy. He wants to buy a camera in the store, right? But he can't afford it, right? So the normal way of buying a camera is you go to the store, you pay the money that it says on the sticker, right? You give it to the cashier, whatever, and you get to take it, right? So what, he doesn't have the money for it. So what does he do? He goes to the person in charge of like the electronics department in the big store, and he says, "Look, I'll give you like, the camera costs $200. I'll give you $100. You know, you could pay off anyone who asks any questions and keep the rest of the money. Let me take the camera." Instead of paying the full price and let you know then the money will go to the actual store, he's sort of stopping short of going to the store and giving it to one of the subordinates, one of the guys who happens to just be working for the store, give him the money and then take what he wants. So it's the same idea over here. Hashem delegate. I don't want to use the word delegates, but I'm not sure if we could use the word delegates. But Hashem uses certain avenues of bringing Shefa into the world. Right? Malachim is one of the avenues of Shefa that Hashem brings to the world. You could say that the different spheres is also another avenue. You know, people, this is very controversial, because the Chuvas Rivash says that, we could talk about this the whole day if you want, but the Chuvas Rivash writes that the Christians believe in three gods, and the Mekubalim believe in 10 gods. Because the 10 spheres is like 10 aspects of Hashem. So that he understands that means like they worship like 10 gods. He says it's not true. But the Mekubalim will tell you it's not true. Rabbi Arya Kaplan talks about this. That the idea of the 10 spheres are like windows. There's 10 windows that Hashem will shoot Shefa through those different windows. Now the question is like this. Does a window exist? No, a window doesn't exist. A window is just a means of, let's say, going from one place to the other. But it's not a thing on itself. It's not a source in itself of the Shefa. So Hashem shoots the Shefa through different windows, or through different avenues, through different malachim, through different mazalas, all these different types of things. So instead of going directly to Hashem, giving him the money and getting, you know, giving him the avodas Hashem that you're supposed to do, and then getting what Hashem wants to give you, instead you go to this mazel or to this planet or this malach or whatever. You try to bribe the malach instead of bribing the store itself. You're bribing, instead of giving money to the store, you're giving money to the one of the workers to try to get what you want. That's the same idea.
And the owner really owns the camera, and you should be going to him.
Right.
Hashem.
You hear this?
Yeah.
Fine. Akuba says, "V'yesh emim tzaddikim harbe ki yetzivay olu imay ba'ais hasha." It says that many v'yesh emim. Some people say that many tzaddikim like him came up with him at that time. So we said, what do you mean? So the question is like this: we said before that olu imay acherim, other people came up with him when Shmuel Levi was conjured, when his spirit was conjured up. So other people came with him. So why is the Midrash repeating v'yesh emim tzaddikim harbe came up with him? We already said that other people came with it. So the Radas is like this, that the Chiddush is, you would have thought that when it says Olu Imay Acherim, that means that other people that were buried near Shmuel and Avi, so when his spirit came back down to the earth, so their spirits also came back down to the earth. Doesn't matter, regardless of whether they were Tzaddikim or Rishon or whatever, whoever was buried in his general vicinity. So then the other Medrash is telling you that no, it was Dafka Tzadikim. Tzadikim that were like him, they came up with him like as a cover to accompany him when he was coming back down to this earth. That's what the Radal says. And then the Radal says that really what I think the Pshat is that this line over here in the Midrash was added on later from based on a different Medrash from Vayikra Rabba where there's a parallel to this and it has that line of Tzadikim Harbik Yisabai and somebody who was editing Pirkei Deblezer just added this line based on that Medrash, but it's really not adding anything more than what we had already said. The Baiz HaGadol is an interesting discussion. He brings from the Zera Berech of Berachus Shapiro, one of the early Mukubalim, the Talmud of the Megala Mukais. The Zera Berech in Parshas Amar writes that V'yesh Oimrim Tzadikim Harbei Ki Yisabai. What does it mean, V'yesh Oimrim? He says, V'yesh Oimrim is a mistake. It's not really supposed to say V'yesh Oimrim. It's supposed to say V'yud Aleph Tzadikim. 11 Tzadikim came up with him. That's what he says that some people say. And he says that some people want to say that it's supposed to say Yesh Oimrim. He says that's a mistake. Really, it's supposed to say Yud Aleph, not Yesh Oimrim. But the Baal HaGadol brings this down. He disagrees. He says, no, it's really supposed to, it really means Yesh Oimrim. It doesn't mean Yud Aleph. Also, if you say that it means Yud Aleph, you would have to take out the words Harbei. Because it's Yud Aleph Tzadikim, 11 Tzadikim, Harbei, many, that doesn't make any sense. So you would have to say Yud Aleph Tzadikim Kiyotzibai, 11 Tzadikim like him. That's that according to that Gersa, you would have to read. That's what it seems that the Zera Berech had a Gersa without the word Harbei. I once mentioned a funny anecdote that my Menahal told me when I was in high school. He said that he once wrote on a test, you know, how did Noach have light in the Teva? I think I told you this when we were talking about the story of the Teva. How did Noach have light in the Teva? So somebody wrote on the test that there was a stone that gave off light and 11 windows. Okay, so what is right? So the question is, where did this kid get that answer from? He was a 9th grade Rebbe in the yeshiva. So where did the kid get this from? 11 windows. Where does it say 11 windows? And where is he coming from? Like 11? Like why Dafka 11? Why not 15 windows? Where do you get 11 windows from? So he's trying to figure it out. He looks at Rashi and Chumash. Rashi and Chumash says that Tzoyer Tassel Teva. So it says in Rashi, I think the Lashon Rashi is like a Margolis Teva that gives Shemeir Kitzarayim, a rock that gives off light like the afternoon. V'yesh Oimrim Chaloinos. And some people say it was windows. And this kid thought V'yesh Oimrim means V'yud Aleph Chaloinos at 11 windows. Right. Rabbi Eliezer says, "Kol ha'meisim oimdim b'tchias ha'meisim v'oilim b'levusheihen." All the people who have died are going to come back to life by tchias ha'meisim are going to come up b'levusheihen in their clothing. And the Radal in Ois Ayin Zion has a whole arichus of here. What does it mean that they're going to come up in their clothing? Does that mean that they're going to come up in the clothing that they were buried in? Or does it mean that they're going to come up and that they're going to miraculously get like new clothing, the same type of clothing that they wore when they were alive?
Are there halachas about what you should be? Because I thought there was a shroud that you. Halachically.
We'll get to that in a second.
Is everyone wearing the same thing?
Mimi atalamid. From where do you learn out this idea that when a person comes back to life, he's going to come back with his clothing? Mizera ha'aretz, from the seed of the land. Kal v'chomer michito. You learn it out of a kal v'chomer from a piece of wheat. Machito shenikbara ruma yaitzes b'chama levushin. Just like a kernel of wheat, which is buried naked in the ground, and it comes up with all kinds of clothing around it. Right? You put one little kernel, a seed of wheat under the ground, and it comes up, and you have the stalk and the chaff and whatever, all these things that grow with the piece of wheat. So you see, it comes up with its clothing. So tzaddikim, righteous people, shenikburu bilvusheihen, that are buried with clothing. They're not buried naked, they're buried with clothing. Alachas kama v'chama, how much more so should it be that when they're going to come out of the ground, they're going to be dressed in clothing? So I don't know, I don't know exactly all the halachas of tachrichim esim, burial shrouds. I never learned it. I never learned Hilchos Avelos. It was Baruch Hashem, Bli Ayin Hara was never negeah to me, so the minig in the Olam is not to learn these things until it's negeah, or until you're a Rav, I guess.
Because
yeah.
Once it's negeah, you're not allowed to learn it.
Right. No, you are, because you're allowed these
to read.
Well, you're not allowed to go be in. Yeah. So, but what I did see is that the Mabit in Beis Elikim says an interesting thing about this. In Shar Yisoidus Perek Nun Hey, the same Mara Malkum we spoke about earlier in the Perek, so he wants to say that based on this Medrash, that when we say that you're supposed to bury somebody in his clothing, so he says that you should dafka bury him in clothing that's made out of flax or cotton. Dafka, a burial shroud, the tachrichin should be made of flax or cotton. Why? So he says, because we learned out that by Tchias HaMeisim people are going to come back dressed from the Chita, from the Kal V'Chomer, from the Chita. And by Chita, it was something that naturally grows in the ground. So you only can know from what the Kal V'Chomer teaches you. And the Kal V'Chomer only teaches you that something that naturally grows in the ground is gonna grow clothing. But something, so therefore, cotton, which naturally grows in the ground, and flax, which naturally grows in the ground. So if you bury him in that, so then you have the kaluchem from chita that he'll come back with clothing. So therefore, you should bury him in flax or cotton. But let's say you use a synthetic type of cloth, or if you use wool or something from animal-based, so then you don't have the kaluchem because it's not comparable to chita. So then you won't be able to say that just like a chita goes in naked and it grows these things, then a person will also grow these things. Because these types of clothing don't grow. It's an interesting point that the Mabit makes over there. Fine, weiter. I don't understand how exactly the logic of this next line goes, but this is what it says. V'loyoid, not only this, ela mimi atalamed, from whom do you learn the idea of that by Tchias HaMeisim people are going to come back with their clothing? And we're going to see more about this story next week. Mechananya, Mishael, Vazaria. From the story of Hananya, Mishael, and Azaria, sheyardu l'sech kibshan o'esh, levushin, that they were sent into the fiery furnace while they were clothed, v'olu b'sachrichehen, and they came up with their clothes. They went into the fiery furnace dressed, and they came up with their tachrichehen. I'm not sure if tachrichehen here means their clothes that they went with, or it means like burial clothes. Because tachrichehen usually means burial clothes. Like tachrichehen comes like a lotion of krichel or karech, like we have on Pesach. It's wrapped, like it's a wrapped thing. But it says that they were dressed, and then they came up with tachrichehen. Shenemar, usar yishen lehis karech. And the hair of their heads was not singed. So we're saying that just like Hananya, Mishael, Azaria, they went into the fire and they didn't get hurt and they came out with their clothing, so too when a person dies and comes back to life, he's going to come back with his clothing. I'm not sure exactly how the logic works, because Hananya, Mishael, Azaria didn't die. So where are you learning out to somebody who did die? I don't know. V'ayid mimiyat olamid, also from whom else do you learn that when a person dies and comes back to life, he's going to be dressed? Mishmuel Anavi, from the story of Shmuel Anavi, Sha'ala Aita Mi'il, he came up wearing his mi'il, wearing his tunic. Shinamar, it says in the Pasuk, the story that we were talking about before, that the lady, the necromancer, she conjured the spirit of Shmuel Anavi, and she was scared, right? And Sha'ala said, what are you scared? Don't worry, don't be scared. What are you scared of? What did you see? But Timer, so the answer is, she said to him, Ish Zokin Oile, an old man came up, Vuhu Oita Me'il, and he was wearing a Me'il. That's the Me'il that Shmuel Navi used to wear. And so you see that Shmuel Navi, even though he died, when she brought back his spirit, he was still wearing his clothes. So from here you see that by Tchias HaMeisim, even though people are going to die, when they come back, they're going to still be wearing clothing. Fine. The Radal asks the question, he says, but maybe it's different because Shmuel Anavi was summoned within 12 months after he died. So maybe Shmuel Anavi is different because his clothes never had a chance to decompose. So then when he comes back, he'll come back with his clothes. But maybe a person who's dead for hundreds of years and then Tchias HaMeisim is going to happen, his clothes already doesn't exist, so maybe he won't come back with his clothes. Where do you see that he will? And the Radal says that's the answer. I don't exactly understand what he's talking about, so I'm just going to say the question. But let's go back there. Rabbi Nosson Omer. Rabbi Nosson says, Kol ha-Nevi'im nisnab'u b'chayehem. All the prophets prophesied in their lifetimes. U'Shmuel nisnab'u v'chayov v'achar moisai. All the prophets prophesied in their lifetimes. Shmuel Navi, he prophesied in his lifetime and also after his death. Sh'omar Shmuel Shaul. Oh, so again, the story was that Shmuel Navi was already dead, and Shaul Melech was the king, and the Plishtim were fighting against the Jews, and the Jews were in this seemed like a losing situation. They looked like they were going to mamish lose the war. And the question was going to be, Shaul wanted to know, what am I supposed to do over here? What can I do? Is Hashem with us? Is Hashem not with us? Does he want us to fight? He wants us to give up? What's the strategy should we take? Right? And he didn't have anyone to ask, so he wanted to bring up the spirit of Shmuel to ask him and find out what to do. So we're going to see that Shmuel Navi gives Shaul an answer. He tells them basically what to do, and that's sort of what happens. But the Radal asks an interesting question over here that I wouldn't have necessarily thought as a question, but the Radal asks it as a question. I think his answers are pretty poshut. But the Radal asks the following question. This is based on a pasuk in this week's Haftarah. The Haftarah for Shabbos HaGadol, the last pasuk, actually it's really technically the second last pasuk, in the Nevuah of Malachi in the end of Treyasar. It says, a famous pasuk, Hine anoichi sheileach lochem es Eliya hanovi. Behold, I'm going to send for you Eliya, the prophet, lifnei bo yarem Hashem agadav anoro, before the great day of Hashem is going to come. V'heishiv levavo yisal banem, v'lebanem levavo yisam, and he's going to return the hearts of the fathers to the sons, and the hearts of the sons to the fathers, and he's going to make peace between everybody. Right? So, now, that's talking about Eliya HaNavi. So the question is, that Eliya HaNavi had died hundreds of years prior. Eliya HaNavi died, let's say, 200-300 years before the prophecies of Malachi. So how could it be talking about Eliyahu HaNavi? We said that every prophet only gave prophecies in his lifetime. And here we're saying, except Shmuel gave it in his lifetime and after his death. And here we're talking about Eliyahu HaNavi, and it's already after his death. So that's Radal's question. So Radal has two answers. First of all, he says that Eliyahu HaNavi never really died. He just went up to Shemayim, but he's technically still alive, so therefore it's still called B'chayav. That's one terence. And the Radal says, and I think this is Pashut, that the Pasuk doesn't say that he's giving a Nevuah. There's no Nevuah of Eliyahu HaNavi after he died. It doesn't say a Nevuah. It just says, that he's going to get people to return to Hashem. And he's going to get Hashem to return to Klal Yisrael. Right? But it doesn't say that he's going to give a Nevuah. Okay. Right, so what does Shmuel HaNavi say to him? Shmuel Navi said to Shaul, "Imatoshe me'alatz." See, if you listen to my advice, lipo b'cherev tehei misoscha kaporo olacha. If you listen to my advice and you fall and you allow yourself to fall onto the sword and get killed, so then your death will be for yourself an atonement. V'yehei goyolcha imi b'mokem she'ani shori, and your lot, your portion will be with me in the place where I am. That's what Shmuel Levi tells Shaul. Basically, he's telling Shaul, go fight and allow yourself to be killed. And that's what happened in the end of Shmuel Aleph, beginning of Shmuel Beis. That's what happened. That Shaul HaMelech was caught in an unfortunate situation with the archers that were there. And he was mamish scared. And he basically committed suicide or assisted suicide. And that was the end of Shaul. V'shamal atzosai, and Shaul HaMelech listened to the advice of Shmuel. V'nofel b'cherev, huvuchol beisai, he fell upon the sword. He fell upon the sword. He and his whole family, shnemar v'yama Shaul u'shloish banov. Shaul and his three sons died. The end of the passage says they died on one day. Lama, why did he do this? Shehei chelkoi im Shmuel HaNavi la'asad lavei. So that he will have his portion with Shmuel HaNavi in the future. Shneimar, it says in the pasuk, Umochar ata uvanacha imi. Right, Shmuel HaNavi in his posthumous nevuah to Shaul HaMelech said to Shaul HaMelech, when you die, Umochar, tomorrow, you and your sons are going to be with me. That's what Shmuel HaNavi said to Shaul. You and your sons are going to be with me. My imi, what does it mean you're going to be with me? With me, in my realm, just that place where in Gan Eden or in Eilat Mabul, where Shmuel Hanavi is that darga, that's where Shaul HaMelech is also going to be, because he committed suicide, and that death that the Navi told him to do was a kapara for his avera. Not sure if it's a kapara for his avera of not killing a malik, or kapara for his avera of going to the Eivin Yedoini. Not sure exactly. We'll see the hemshech of the medrash. We actually spoke about this a little bit in earlier in Perek Yud Zayin as well, where that we said that Shaul HaMelech is in the same place in Gan Eden as the Shmuel Hanavi. But Hillel Azak actually happens to be over here. This line it says "My Imi Omer Biyachem and Imi Bichitzosi." So the Radal says that was added on based on the Gemara. The Gemara in Brachos says "Imi is Imi Bichitzosi," and he says that the editors of the Medrash or somebody added this later on, but it's not really part of the Pirkei of the Blazer. Hillel Hazakin Onar. Hillel, the elder, said, Amar loy Shmuel Shaul. Shmuel Hanavi said to Shaul, Loy dayach shloy shamata b'kayloi. It's not enough that you didn't listen to the voice of Hashem, v'loy asisach rein apay b'amalik, and you didn't, you know, devastate Amalek by carrying out the anger. But you didn't listen to Hashem by Amalek. Rather, you also went and consulted with a Baal HaSev, with a necromancer. Woe upon the shepherd, woe upon his sheep. Because it's going to be because of you that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to give over the Jews into the hands of the Plishtim. And you know they had, you know, a military defeat over there, and in that story, at least temporarily, till David HaMelech came along. But that's the end of the story. That Shaul HaMelech died, and he got his kapar, and he ended up going to the mechitzasei of Shmuel HaNavi. Sam, just an interesting thing I wanted to speak about that's slightly related to what we're talking about. We're not going to go vaita today. The thing is like this. There's a contradiction in different sources about when Shmuel HaNavi died. You know, people go up to the cave of Shmuel HaNavi, it's like a famous thing. Chaf Ches Ir, I believe they go. It's different sort of, a lot of the different Rishonim, they say Chaf Ches or Chaf Tes Ir or Chaf Aleph Ir. There's one source that says Chaf Tes Sivan. All in the same general list, towards like the beginning of the summer. But in other places, it's Mavur, the Radak sort of says as the Yalkut Shemayni, it's Mavur that Shmuel Navi actually died on Rosh Hashanah, or on Gimel Tishrei, not long after Rosh Hashanah, the day after Rosh Hashanah. So there's like a variation of different sources, like when did Shmuel Navi die? Was it, you know, in Iyar, or was it in Tishrei? So the Shalos HaTshuva is Tshuva Me'ava from Rabbi Lazar Fleckles. He was a Talmud of the Neida Behuda. So he asked this question, and he said, that's a machlokes, it's different midrashim. When did Shmuel HaNavi die? When didn't he die? But I saw, a friend of mine showed this to me a while ago. There's a sefer called Shalos HaTshuva Rabbi Kiva Yosef. A Tshuva sefer from Rabbi Kiva Yosef Schlesinger. You heard of Rabbi Kiva Yosef Schlesinger? You heard of him? He was one of the Chashuvim in Hungary. And then he came to Eretz Yisrael. He was one of the early Yerushalmi Rabbanim. Have you heard of David Baran? You know the street Rehov Haran in Beitar? Right, we have the street Rehov Haran. You know who it's named after? It's not named after the Ran, like the Chidushi Ran and the Gemara. It's named after one of the Yerushalmi Rabbanim named Rav Nochum Mishadikar. His last name was actually Weissfish. Rav Nochum Mishadikar. So Rav Nochum Mishadikar had a son whose name was Rav David Baran, was one of the Chash of Yerushalmi Rabbanim. So Rav David Baran was actually son-in-law of Rav Kiva Yosef Schlesinger. Rav Kiva Yosef Schlesinger was a Talmud of the Ksav Sefer and the Shalos HaTshuvos Machane Chaim. He was one of the Chash of a Hungarian Rabbanim. Akupanim, he has some very interesting psakim, Rav Kiva Yosef Schlesinger. Akupanim, so he also talks about this in one of his tshuvos, and he brings three possible answers to this question of how to explain the contradiction between the different dates given for Shmuel Hanavi's Yahrzeit. Is it during Iyar or is it during Tishri? So one of the answers he gives is simply that Shmuel Hanavi died twice. One time was when he physically died. Okay? And the other time was when this Balas Oiv came and brought his spirit back down, and then he went back. So it's as if he died again. So he died twice. And that's why that's why there's two different dates for his yahrzeit. Really, he died in Tishrei, because that's like up from the cheshbon of the stories over there. It came out that he died in Tishrei. And then this, we said that he died in Iyar, really happened. It's talking about when he was conjured up, and then he went, and then he died again. Something like that. That's one mahalach. The other mahalach, he says, is that he died twice, meaning something else. He died twice, meaning there was the time that he actually died, let's say in Tishrei, whatever, that's when he actually died. And then there was another point in his life, which, it's not when he died, but it's as if he died then. What is that? That was before Shaul HaMelech became king, when Shmuel was about 50 years old. Shmuel was the Shefet and the Navi of Klal Yisrael for many, many years. And when he was 50 years old, so Klal Yisrael, and he was considered an old man at 50, he died at 52, but he was considered an old man already. So Klal Yisrael came over to him and said, you know, we want you to establish a king for us. Now, when by asking Shmuel that we want you to establish a king for us, that or speak to Hashem to arrange that we're going to have a king, so basically they were telling Shmuel that, you know, we're taking you down from your role as the leader of Klal Yisrael, and we want somebody else to be our leader. And taking him down from the role of leadership, that's called killing him. That's called his death. Where do we see that? So he says we see that in at least two places. It says in the Pasuk in Parashat Shmos, Vayamas Melech Mitzrayim, right? Vayakum Melech Chodesh al Mitzrayim. This is the king of Mitzrayim died, and then another king of Mitzrayim came up, and he was even worse with his gzeiros or whatever, right? So what does it mean that the king of Mitzrayim died? So we know Rashi's pshat that he got saras. So because he had tzaraas, so it's as if he died, or whatever. The Zohar says a different pshat. The Zohar says, now when it says that the king of Mitzrayim died, what it means is that the elders, the people who, you know, the elders of Mitzrayim, of Egypt, the people that really controlled the country, they deposed the king for 3 months. They said, unless you do something about this Jew problem that we have in the country, We're not gonna let you be king anymore. They took him down from his leadership, and then after 3 months, he agreed. Okay, we're gonna do something about the Jews. We'll have some sort of solution, final solution. So then they let him be king again. That's what the Zohar says. So the Zohar explains that when it says that the king of Mitzrayim died, it doesn't literally mean that he died. It means that he was deposed from being king. He lost his leadership status, and then afterwards he regained it, and he's like a new person, sort of. And there's another one, Rashi, in also Parashat Shmos, where it says that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, "Mesu kol anoshim hamavakshim es nafshecha." All the people that want to kill you, they died. Right? Dothan and Aviram that wanted to kill Moshe Rabbeinu beforehand, that's why he ran away from Mitzrayim. Right? So he says that they all died. So Rashi says, what do you mean that they died? We find Dothan and Aviram still making trouble with the Jews in the Midbar 40 years. Right, and Dothan and Aviram were still making trouble all the way by the story of Korach, and also the Parashat B'Shalach with the Mon. So what do you mean they died? So Rashi says it doesn't mean literally that they died. Rather, what it means is that they were taken away from their position of power. That's called that they died. So Kivi Yezir Shlesinger says that Shmuel Lavi died twice. One is when he actually died, and one is when the Jews asked him for a new king. That's as if he died then. So one yahrzeit is reflecting his actual death, and one yahrzeit is reflecting when the time that they asked him for a new king, for a king, that's considered like a death. A third answer, he says, this is an interesting, it happens to be that I was at Kever Shmuel Navi yesterday. I took my family there. We walked from Ramot to Kever Shmuel Navi. Nabi Samuel, they call it in Arabic. Kever Shmuel Navi. It's outside Ramot. It's like on the outskirts of Yerushalayim. Yeah, you've been there?
Yeah.
So we actually went there yesterday. Now, because the reason we went for my son Ali Mach, we did a upsharing there. People think, you know, what's the earliest source of the idea of upsharing, of doing a chalaka? So they say that the earliest source is Arizal. Arizal says that Arizal took his son to the Kever of Reb Shimon Yochai in Miron to give his son a haircut. But that's not really the earliest source. The earliest source is the Arizal's Rebbe's Rebbe. His Rebbe was the Shita Mekubetzes, or Bitzal Ashkenazi, and Bitzal Ashkenazi's Rebbe was the Radvaz, of David ben Zimra, who was the Rav in Egypt. The Radvaz, he actually, interestingly, the Radvaz, even though he was Arizal's Rebbe's Rebbe, he actually outlived Arizal. He lived longer, he lived like 2-3 years after the Arizal died, he died. He had a long life. He like lived in his 90s, and Arizal like lived to his 40s or something. But the Radvaz in his Tshuvas writes that there's a minhag to go to Kev Shmuel Navi to give his son a haircut. That's the earliest source for the minhag of the Chalaka, going to Shmuel Navi. Al Kapanim, it's the cave of Shmuel Navi, right? So we know where the cave of Shmuel Navi, they say, is outside of Ramot over there, in Nibi Samuel. Now the Seder Deris and other sources bring down a whole story that when the Christians, when the Crusades came and took over Eretz Yisrael, so they went to the cave of Shmuel Navi and they took out the bones of Shmuel Navi and they reburied him elsewhere in Shiloh, or something like that. There's this story, some people agree with this story, some people say it's not true, whatever, it's a whole neither about whether this story is true or not. But the point is, that that's what people want to say. Let's say Seder says this. So Rabbi Kiva Yosef wants to say that, you know, there's a halacha that when a person dies, or so his close relatives are Shiva. And there's another halacha that when a person, his bones are dug up and he's reburied elsewhere, so you sit Shiva again, the person sits Shiva again because the bones are reburied elsewhere. So he wants to say, in that regard, you could say that Shmuel Levi died twice. One, it was when he actually died and he was buried wherever he was originally buried. And then, according to this story, the Christians came and dug up his bones and buried them elsewhere, so you could say that's another time that he died. So there's two yardsticks of Shmuel Levi. One was when he actually died, and one was when he was reburied the second time. And that's how he resolves the contradiction. It's a bit difficult because the sources that talk about his yardstick could be predate the Christian conquering of that area. I'm not sure. Because the ones that say that he was buried in Ir and Sivan, Chav Tes Ir, Chav Aleph Ir, Chav Ches Ir, whatever, those Girsos are really coming from a sefer called Megillus Tainus. Actually, really, it's coming from the last part of Megillus Tainus. It's called Maimer HaAchron of Megillus Tainus. Megillus Tainus was written in the time of the early Tanoim, and was written in the time of the early Tanoim. It's a list of days that you're not allowed to fast. The Maimer HaAchron of Megillus Tainus was possibly written in the time of the Ga'inim, which are days that you do fast. The Shulchan Aruch brings it down in Siman, I think, I don't remember, in Aruch Chaim, Tuf Kuf Pei something maybe, or Tuf Kuf Ayin Ches, I think Tuf Kuf Ayin Ches, something, I don't remember. In Hilchas Tainus, the Machaber brings a whole list of Tainus Tzadikim, days that righteous people fast. And this is one of them. That's where this whole thing of Shmuel Navi and Chav Ches, you know, that's where it comes from. When it comes from the Shulchan Aruch, and comes following these Rishonim, following this Maimer Achron of Megillus Tainus. Maimer Achron Megillus Tainus, they say was written in the time of the Goyim, which predates the Crusades conquering Eretz Yisrael. So Akiva Yosef sort of answers this question by saying that like they wrote it with Ruach HaKodesh, referring to an event that happened afterwards. It could be, yeah, it could be no. I don't know. It's an interesting pshat that he says. It's a difficult idea. Okay, we'll stop over here. A little too late.